Thank you, Carol. Welcome back. Second hour of the show. Plenty to get to this afternoon. In this hour, I want to start with CBS News correspondent Peter King. I saw a story this morning on CBS News about a woman down in Florida, Rebecca Jones, who is a former, she's described as a COVID-19 data scientist who turned herself into police after a warrant was issued. And it has to do with the, apparently, the illegal use of a state's computer system. Peter, good afternoon. Happy New Year. What can you tell me about this? It seems like a bit of an intriguing case.
Well, this has been going on for several months, and Rebecca Jones, when she worked for the state, was running and creating the dashboard that was used for coronavirus data. She has said all along, when she went public, that the state was not giving out all the real data, all the accurate data, and started her own. Basically, she was asked to leave, and she started her own dashboard, which was her own independent project. And the state says she broke into state health department servers in order to get the data that she was using. That's where the charges come from.
So, Peter, at one point she said, well, this was her statement, because she turned herself in. She said, to protect my family from continued police violence and to show that I'm ready to fight for whatever they throw at me, I'm turning myself into police in Florida Sunday night. The governor will not win his war on science and free speech. He will not silence those who speak out. And is she, because the other thing about this that I think is interesting, and I guess I'm a little confused, and this is where I need some clarification. She wanted people, fellow employees, to, quote, speak up before another 17,000 people are dead. You know this is wrong. You don't have to be a part of this. Be a hero. What is she trying to say there? I'm not sure how to interpret that.
Well, let's go back to what I just said. She said that the data that the state was providing was not complete, was incomplete and faulty. And she says her data, the data she crunched, was the real deal. And it shows things here being much worse than the state wanted to admit. And keep in mind that in recent days, we should point out that the state numbers that have been released mostly in the past few weeks have been between 15,000 and 20,000 cases per day. So those are big numbers, but there are a lot of people who don't trust the state numbers. There has been somewhat of a lack of transparency in many cases.
Right.
And interestingly enough, the governor basically refuses to address the increasing numbers and instead is choosing publicly to concentrate on, well, hey, here's what we're doing with our vaccination efforts. But the other thing I think you need to know, and your listeners need to know, is that there are no statewide mitigation efforts down here, and the real numbers could possibly be much worse than the numbers that are being released. The critics believe that that may be the case.
But, Peter, is she being, because she's essentially a whistleblower, right? I mean,
yes.
Are there people on her side in Florida trying to take up her case saying, look, this is because it's her against DeSantis. Is that basically what it is, the administration?
Right. And, she does have people on her side. And I think there have been a couple of fundraising efforts for her defense and that kind of thing. So, yes, there is support for Ms. Jones.
Interesting case down there. CBS News correspondent Peter King. Always great to have you on, Peter. I appreciate it. Thank you.
It's going to be interesting to see where all of this goes. Thanks for having me on.
I would agree. That's why I wanted a little clarification here this afternoon. This is a story that just cleared. Let me see. I don't think Carol had, I missed some of the news, so I apologize if Carol had this, but apparently there's a judge in St. Louis County that has ordered four council members to file a plea by Friday in response to this legal fight. We talked with Colleen Wassinger, former county board member, in the last hour. The order, this is according to the Post, right? The order speeds along an unusual legal maneuver by St. Louis County to have a judge decide whether Lisa Clancy or Rita Hurd Days was legally elected to the chair of the council. So basically, the judge here, Thomas Albus is his name, he has ordered Rita Days, Mark Carter from the 7th District, I'm sorry, Rita's in the 1st District, Tim Fitch from my district, the 3rd, Shalonda Webb, the new member from the 4th, to respond to the allegation that the four council members illegally took charge of the council last week. I think that's a pretty easy response. You know, Mark Carter and Shalonda and Tim Fitch and who am I missing there? Might be missing one. Rita? Basically say, look, it's pretty easy, Judge. they elected Lisa Clancy with members who were not elected to office. It would be, this is the analogy that I used last hour, it's like electing Mitch McConnell majority leader when the number of Democrats outnumbers Republicans. It's just pretty easy. I don't even know why this has to go to a court, but that's what they're doing. I want to come back. I have some great stuff from Bill Maher. We'll do that here in just a couple of minutes. I got into it a little bit yesterday, but I really think some of his points on the media and also just some of the double standards out there, and you might be surprised about what Bill Maher says about California and Gavin Newsom in particular, are interesting. Clyde, did you hear that thing? I was going to cover this a little bit here. The Cardinals have announced that they're going to do this fans at bat batting practice experience at Busch Stadium. So you can get a package up to 10 guests. McClellan's involved here. Did you hear that? That's got to be
fun. Of course he is. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I think if they're looking for hunting tips, you know, I can see why they go to Kyle.
No, but this would be fun. So Scott Terry, who's also another great alum, and Danny Cox and Scott Cooper, who played third base, are going to be involved here. They're going to keep it safe. I've always wanted to kind of – I played baseball when I was a kid, and then I played softball, you know, in the beer-drinking leagues. And when I quit drinking, I pretty much retired from softball. And I measured my swing speed at Family Golf last week. Adam at Family Golf has all the new simulators in TrackMan. So basically, I realized that my golf swing speed is about 18 miles per hour.
Is that good?
That might be a slight – no. No. The average pro is, you know, you're in the 105, 110, then you get into the, but I'm slightly exaggerating. I'm not going to tell you what it really is because it's so bad, but I've always wanted to kind of do this, but I feel like, you know, I've never even done it in the batting cage that they have. You know, you can do that experience at Busch Stadium and sort of take some batting practice. I've never done that. Have you done that as an adult, like taking batting practice?
No, I have a feeling that I'd really embarrass myself. And to do that, I guess in front of 10 people wouldn't be so bad. But I think everyone has that idea that, oh, yeah, I could hit a home run out of Busch Stadium. And then you really get there and you see how far away home plate is from the walls. And that's, it's intimidating. Now, maybe give me like an aluminum bat, I might be able to do it. But with a wood bat, I don't think there's a chance I'd be able to do it.
Man, I would have loved to have tried this about 20, maybe 30 years ago when I, you know, the other thing is I have no upper body strength. So that's a bit of a problem, too.
You kind of need that.
You do just a little bit. There's always steroids, Dave. It's never too late. Just keep that in mind. It's 3:14 at the Voice of St. Louis. We'll come back. I want to break down this Bill Maher tape. He addressed the insurgency, the insurrection, all the things about the president from a very, as you might expect, he's a lefty liberal perspective. But he kind of brought it around, and he sticks the knife into liberals pretty well, too, in what he did in his monologue over the weekend. We'll get to it next on KMOX. Hang in there.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law on KMOX.
I've always kind of had a bit of a love-hate relationship with Bill Maher just because I've disagreed with him vehemently on some issues, and he obviously is a very liberal guy. But I've been intrigued by a lot of his philosophy over the years, including his bravery, his courage on Islamic radicalism. And, you know, he's been on point on that. You'll hear a little reference in some of this audio. So he's got this show on HBO Real Time, and clearly he is offering opinions from his perspective on the left. But he has a lot of people on the right. I think Kellyanne Conway was a guest over the weekend trying to defend the legacy of Donald Trump. And that's one of the maybe the saddest things about all this. You know, if you look, the White House put this list out. They're going to probably take it down tomorrow, whitehouse.gov, all of the accomplishments of this president, the economic boom, the regulation, which I'm going to get to here in just a second, the tax relief, reforming the tax code, all these things that now will, to a certain extent, be wiped away by what happened 2 weeks ago. But one thing that some people have made clear, and I appreciate the fact that Bill Maher's doing it here, is there are a lot of people on their heels right now, justifiably so, because they're being labeled as racist idiots in the same way that the rioters were, which is completely unfair. And Bill Maher, now this first cut's a little longer, but hear him out, because he basically says the same thing, but he makes some broader points.
And finally, new rule, as bad as last week was, worst school trip ever. Let's not confuse 5,000 people with 74 million. Excuse me. Yes, even supporting the insurrection in spirit is, well, deplorable. But there's a difference between holding illiberal beliefs and acting violently on them. At least that's what they always told me about Islamic terrorism. I keep wrestling on this show with the hard question of how do Americans, all of us, learn to share a country with assholes you can't stand? I've preached, and still do, that you can hate Trump, but not all the people who like him. And as counterintuitive as it may seem, you can like something run by assholes without being one yourself. Just ask Chick-fil-A. There's been so much liberal happy talk this week, jerking each other off about how, oh, this is the end of the Republicans now. Yeah, just like Watergate was the end of the Republicans, and Bush after Katrina was, and now it's Trump. Please, does anyone think that no matter who's running in 2024 on Election Day, it won't be extremely close? I'll bet anyone out there a quadrillion zillion dollars it will be. Because 74 million Trump voters are not self-deporting, and neither are we.
All right, and that's a great point. And he's right. You know, these are people, and I think that's why people are on their heels right now, because they feel like they supported the president. I voted for him in the fall. I didn't vote for him the first time. But when this happened on January 6th, when all this nonsense about Antifa being involved, one of the examples I used was Ashley Babbitt Antifa? I do not believe so. Some people deem that insensitive. I did not apologize. I didn't feel like I needed to apologize. Ashley Babbitt knew what she was doing, I think. She got herself into trouble. And unfortunately, she died. She'd be alive today if that hadn't happened. But there's more to her story. And I was unaware of this. And this is a very interesting observation, I think, on the part of Bill Maher about Ashley Babbitt. Hear him out.
One of the casualties in this attack on the Capitol this month was Ashley Babbitt. She was a Trump-loving small business owner. She had a pool cleaning company right down the road here in San Diego. She was an Air Force vet who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and she lost her life trying to prevent Biden from becoming president, even though she had voted for the Obama-Biden ticket not that long ago. But somehow, she came to believe that if Joe became president, horses full of Greeks would rape our women and Georgia would go communist. She is the tragedy of the modern Republican voter personified. Pissed off at the greed and corruption that, yes, has squeezed the middle class hard, but always coming up with the wrong answer to who is doing most of this squeezing. She was in financial trouble because in order to keep her business afloat, she resorted to a short-term loan with an interest rate of 169%. That's right, she was being charged 169% interest and went to Washington so she could chant, "Stop the steal!" She died for a second Trump term, even though that would have solved exactly none of her problems.
That's what makes it somewhat fascinating. Dave, did you ever hear any reference to Ashley Babbitt with the payday loans or anything like that? I had not heard that until Bill Maher told
me
that.
Nothing like that.
And that's kind of interesting. I mean, it gives you a little perspective. The one thing, and there's a great piece, and I'm trying to get him on the air, so I don't know if I'm going to have time to get to it today. Gerard Baker in the Wall Street Journal writes about this again today, and he's written a couple of outstanding op-eds. This one, there's as much to learn from Trump's success as his disgrace. You know, there's some great lessons here, and what he says is the best argument for, and this took me a while, and many of you know this, it took me a while to get on board with this in 2016. I didn't understand it completely. He says the best argument for Donald Trump was that he led and gave voices to millions of Americans who had been leaderless and voiceless for decades. The secret people, as a British poet once described in his similarly disdained countrymen smile that paid passed over. The deplorables, the men and women whom the media, entertainment, corporate human resource types never meet in their local Whole Foods, but deride as bigots and brutish Neanderthals. That's a very, very important point. These were people that didn't have a voice, and they still feel that way. And we heard some of those Trump supporters in the audio that I played in the last hour from Frank Luntz, because now they feel even more voiceless, like they can't basically identify with anyone. All right, on the Ashley Babbitt front, though, a little bit more from Bill Maher, because this is going to come around to some regulation stuff here in a second, but a little bit more on Ashley Babbitt.
Should Ashley Babbitt have applied better logic in seeing that her real problem in life wasn't pedophile Democrats or Antifa, and that people like Elizabeth Warren were actually the ones who were at least trying to do something about predatory lending and economic exploitation? Yes, yes. But not everyone can watch MSNBC all day. She had other priorities, like fighting overseas.
Well, and I think Mr. Maher's being trying to be respectful here. We can argue about payday lending and all those things. These are issues that come up before us here in Missouri. But, and Dave, I want you to play cut four. I know what cut five is. I can't remember what cut four is, but I'm sure I wanted to play it. I pulled these yesterday. Here we go.
And maybe, since all politics is local, all she knew was that she lives in a state that seems to care more about her toxic whiteness than her toxic
yes.
brokenness. And that the state that's run entirely by Democrats? Yeah, they didn't stop anyone from charging her 169% interest on a loan either. It shouldn't be that surprising that America is full of fed up, unhappy people who just want to break.
Yeah. And this is what I like about Bill Maher, because he at least takes the time to understand that, and he can rip both sides with equal passion, and I have respect for that. I'd like to think that I can do that. I'd also like to think I haven't done that enough in the past 4 years, so hopefully we can correct that. But one of the stories I shared with you over the past couple of weeks, just because my good friend Rick Niner, who's out in Las Vegas, and we do a video feature every Tuesday morning. However, it wasn't on this morning because I think I canceled by the network. I'm not sure. That's another story. But he's told me, because he's a guy that works in the industrial gas industry, so he's on the phone every day with California. And over the holidays, when you saw these stories about not enough oxygen, how is there possible you don't have enough oxygen? Well, there's plenty of oxygen. You can't deliver the oxygen. And what he told me at the time was, you have hospitals, rural hospitals. California is a big state. The codes, the restrictions, the red tape. Some of this is because of earthquakes, which is understandable, but they've gone well over and above and beyond that. And in order to get a tank built at a hospital that might need a bigger tank for oxygen use, it takes 3 years. Now, I remembered that when I heard this next cut from Bill Maher.
Trump sure didn't drain any swamps, but when it comes to graft and corruption and everybody wetting his beak, California, yeah, that's a swamp too. We can't put up a housing unit for the homeless for less than $500,000 or build a rail line connecting the state for less than $200 million a mile, even though in France, with all their socialism, they did it for more like $15 million. California is a blue state that is completely held together by red tape. It's no wonder people are leaving in droves. I am in year four of trying to get my solar power hooked up. Just building this shed up to code took 3 years. We'll all be getting our power from dilithium crystals before my solar gets turned on. How about this? Will you hook it up if I let the homeless live in it?
Yeah, so that's a great line at the end there, because they probably would. That's how California operates. We all pick our teams in politics, right? I picked my team in the early 1980s when I philosophically started thinking about politics in high school, when I was starting to explore issues. And then Ronald Reagan was elected, and I embraced conservatism. And then, you know, you go through the decades and you fight for your team. A guy like Bill Clinton comes along and he gets demonized, even though I saw a commercial today from 1996. It's amazing how much all of this has evolved. Bill Clinton would be a conservative Republican these days, I almost think, based on the ad that I saw this morning. And everything has shifted around. So we pick our teams, and we don't think our teams can do any wrong sometimes. And a lot of people pick the Trump team, right? How about looking at the entire landscape? And this is what maybe everybody needs to do a little bit more often. And this is where the media comes into play, because I don't think anyone can trust the media. California's not helping people out there. They're just woke. And you need more people like Bill Maher to call them out for the nonsense. Joe Biden's about to do the same thing. And believe me, we're going to focus on it, because it's going to be important. He's going to be, and unfortunately, some of this is going to be pushed to the left because of the behavior of the president's supporters from a couple of weeks ago. They're going to feel like they have, and I think they were already emboldened, but now they're going to feel like they can do it even more. And I tweeted this story. Josh Krasauer, one of our Washington go-to guys, was retweeting a story from earlier this afternoon from Axios. The reporters over there talking about the economic plan. This is, now I'll hold my thoughts on this completely just because you get things that get out there. We had this even with the Justice Department last week. You saw that they were saying that some of the protesters were trying to assassinate members of Congress, all this stuff. Some of that got overheated and overplayed, and they had to admit it. So is some of this right now being overplayed? I don't know. But here's the quote. This is from the Axios story. Biden's economic policy team signaled that it will be the first administration ever to construct economic policy around issues like race, gender equality, and climate change, rather than around traditional indicators like GDP or deficit ratios. Now, there are human aspects to economics, but keep an eye on that. 3:30 at KMOX. What happened to the Mets general manager? He's putting together an amazing team, but then all these pictures start surfacing and allegations from times when he was actually with the Cubs when all this happened a couple of years ago. We're going to talk about that next on KMOX.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
All right, we have an audio cut of the day before the afternoon is up. My friend Lisa Desjardins, she is awesome, PBS NewsHour congressional correspondent. I didn't get to see Lisa this year because usually there's a debate that we both attend in the vice presidential debate, typically here in St. Louis. I think that's where I saw her last, maybe on Capitol Hill. Anyway, she was there when everything happened on the 6th. She is previewing the inauguration tomorrow. She'll join me at 4:20 this afternoon. President Trump has released a video. That was something that we had heard all day long. And apparently it's on the White House website. We are not accessing or haven't accessed it yet. When we get that, we'll certainly share some of it with you this afternoon as well. I do have an audio cut of the day. It might qualify as we move on. So I woke up this morning. I've been hearing a little bit about this stuff with the New York Mets, and then I saw that the GM was fired. And, of course, when you see something like this and then you see the headlines, you're like, oh, what is this all about? Because it's rather salacious. And then you think to yourself, how in the world can somebody be that dumb, especially at this level, to send pictures of their junk? So let's find out a little bit what's going on here, unfortunately. If for no other reason that it's a good distraction from everything going on in Washington. Howie Rose is with us, the radio voice of the New York Mets on WCBS Radio. He does a daily morning talk show on MLB Radio. Howie, welcome back to KMOX in St. Louis. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Can you give us the background here of what happened? In the meantime, you know, as baseball fans following from afar, we're watching all these things happening with the Mets and their roster moves, which seemed rather impressive. So what happened here?
Well, as far as what happened resulting in the firing of Jarrett Porter, that was outlined with great specificity in Jeff Passan's article on ESPN.com, and that speaks to it in a much more comprehensive way than I ever could. So the facts within that article were such that when I went to bed last night, that was right around that time the article broke, I read the article, mm-hmm. I thought, this isn't very good. And by the time I woke up, he was fired. So obviously, there was a lot of swift action.
And we don't have to get into all these salacious details, but basically there was a text relationship that was described as starting casually before, you know, Porter was the Chicago Cubs director of professional scouting, before he began complimenting her on her appearance. So there were just basic texts. And then all of a sudden, it got a little bit more than that. There were pictures that were sent. And I guess these get released. He sent her 17 pictures. The first 15 were of the hotel, and then there was some things that weren't appropriate. How is it possible that this was not known up until now? Is there any indication of that?
Well, because the vetting process only allows for so much, you know, and when you ask someone point blank, is there anything in your past, short of going through all of their texts and emails, which under the law is not permissible without cause, certainly, then there's very little you could do other than to take someone at his word. His public record was what it was and within baseball, and he checked all the boxes that the Mets needed checked for a general manager's candidate. But he said in his interview that there was absolutely nothing that behaviorally should preclude him from getting the job. He lied. And when everything came out, as the Mets were made aware of that last night, it didn't take very long for him to be fired.
Well, what is the reaction from Mets fans? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, the reaction is shock. Nobody saw it coming. But at the same time, I think that the expediency with which the Mets made this move is universally lauded and applauded. I don't think anyone was in any kind of mood for dilly-dallying or dragging feet on this. It was obviously a fireable offense the moment it became knowledge, never mind publicly, but certainly to the Mets. And so Sandy Alderson just said in a Zoom that he's been on that he had a very brief conversation with owner Steve Cohen. They were on the same page. Sandy called Jared, and that was the end of that. But everybody is sort of how quickly the Mets acted.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. Well, let's talk a little baseball here just outside of that, because as I mentioned, I mean, the Mets are putting together a pretty good team, and Jared Porter was helping do that, right?
Yeah, the big moves, and Sandy was just talking about this. You know, Sandy still was going to be the grand poobah of the baseball operation anyway. In fact, the Mets were originally going to hire someone with the title of president of baseball operations who would answer to Sandy, whose title actually is president of the team. So the way the hierarchy was set up, it was going to be Sandy is the team president. He was looking to hire a president of baseball operations, and then there would be a general manager hired underneath that hypothetical incoming PBO. But what happened was they did not get the permission that they had sought from a couple of candidates' teams to interview him for the president of baseball operations job. So they shifted gears and said, all right, Sandy will get more involved in the baseball. And they hired Jared to be the GM, probably with the idea of grooming him towards eventually becoming a president of baseball operations. So, you know, this puts a real hole in that plan. And what Sandy said moments ago is that right now they're not going to fill Jared's role. They're not technically going to promote the assistant general manager, Zach Scott. He's certainly going to continue to work within the organizational infrastructure. But right now, Sandy Alderson is clearly steering the ship.
Are the Mets still in the market? I've heard a little bit of this here in the last couple of days, but I don't know if there's an update for George Springer and maybe even Trevor Bauer.
Well, I think you could probably cross Bauer off the list. I don't say that with any certitude or inside information, but having added the one starting pitcher who will certainly be in the starting rotation in Carlos Carrasco, another guy to give him some more depth in Joey Lucchese, who was brought on yesterday. I mean, it's always possible that they make a move in that direction, but I think when they got Carrasco in the Lindor deal, it probably minimized, if not completely eliminated, the chances for Trevor Bauer. I would think, based on everything we've heard and read, that they're still very much in play for Springer. There are some complicating factors, all of them financial. They have Michael Conforto, a very good homegrown player, now in the prime of his career, who's eligible for free agency at the end of 2021. That's got to be considered if they're going to look to extend him. So certainly it's no slam dunk. They and the Toronto Blue Jays are still considered to be the lead candidates, if not even the only ones necessarily, for Springer.
Where are you on the you know, a lot of this, I think, for a lot of teams right now, sort of hinging on what happens with the DH. It seems likely. Yeah. What are your thoughts on the DH right now in the National League?
Oh, I just think its time has come. I think, for one thing, it's very difficult to say, okay, we're going to bring it back this year, considering that pitchers did not hit in 2020, and suddenly say, okay, you're hitting again for the one or two times a pitcher ever comes to the plate in a game anymore anyway. And then there's a strong likelihood that when they're done with the next collective bargaining agreement, because the current one expires at the end of this year, most people in baseball expect the universal DH to be legislated into that next CBA. So to me, other than the fact that it seems to be used right now as a bargaining chip, there's really no rational reason for bringing the designated hitter, or at least allowing pitchers to hit once again this year, with pretty good likelihood that the universal DH will be legislated into the next CBA anyway. So, you know, I think its time has come. I think it worked well last year, and I still expect it to be part of baseball in both the American and National Leagues this year and beyond.
You know, I was one of those traditionalists who tried to fight it. I don't like it, but yeah, I think
so
its time has come.
I was too.
Yeah. It's an
Here's
evolution.
My reasoning for it. You know, if pitchers are going to be utilized the way they are today, and that means a starting pitcher is going to come to the plate once or twice very rarely more than that. And you're going to be going to your bullpen often and liberally. Then, you know, if you're going to have a non-DH league, you better have a deep bench. And right now, that's very difficult because when you look at a 25, well, now 26-man roster, you know, one of them is your backup catcher. You never really use him as a pinch hitter anyway, or very rarely. Managers have always been reluctant to do that. And if you're going to carry 13 pitchers, then that really gives you a short bench of four or five players. So I just think that the way the game has evolved, it's time.
Howie Rose is the radio voice of the New York Mets. What's the National League East view of the National League Central from afar right now? Any thoughts on our Cardinals and how this division is shaping up?
It's interesting because there's been a lot of attrition and elimination of key players almost with every team. And so I think we're still kind of in a wait-and-see mode for two reasons. You know, given what the owners lost last year, then you could understand to some extent why the market has moved as slowly as it has. And not knowing exactly when spring training is going to begin, even though, you know, publicly they're saying on time, I'm not so sure about that. It's a possibility, but right. I don't know that it's a probability. So I think that impacts the moves that are being made as well. So, you know, I'm always reluctant midway through the off season to really handicap anything until we get into spring training and closer to opening day and see what the rosters really look like. But they've taken some hits in that division, to be sure.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, there's a lot of frustration here on the part of Cardinal Nation because we need a bat, there's no doubt, and there is there certainly is a feeling that there's not enough being done on that front. But you know how baseball fans are. They're always going to feel that way, certainly here with the passion that we have in St. Louis. We got some news today that it looks like, and I'm guessing maybe you're talking about this in New York just a little bit, the number of fans that might be able to attend in person. It looks like we might get 12,000 into Busch Stadium. Anything from New York yet, or are they not announcing anything?
No, not yet. And not yet, but I think it's instructive to note that the Buffalo Bills were allowed 6,700 fans to come into their playoff game up in Buffalo. And that's a much bigger ballpark, of course, than Citi Field is, which holds 42,000. So I'm not sure exactly what the capacity of the Bills' home park is in Orchard Park. I'm going to guess that 6,700 approximates 10%. 10% at Citi Field is 4,200. But 12,000 and change, that's enough to make a lot of noise. That's good.
It looks like, if I'm pulling up the schedule here, the New York Mets and the St. Louis Cardinals are playing the third week of the season, looks like, on March. Well, that would be the preseason. Hang on. I was trying to see what the regular season would be.
Well, I'll help you here. I've got it right in front of me.
Yeah, please do, because I was trying to do it on the fly, and I'm failing.
No, the Mets are scheduled to play four games in St. Louis on the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th of May. And then the Cardinals go to New York in mid-September. But, you know, what we have to wonder about is, let's say they do push the season back and maybe opening day is closer to May 1st than April 1st. Will they just pick up the schedule as it was written, or will there be a more streamlined schedule to minimize travel? Although, you know, all those questions are still lingering a lot deeper into an off season than they generally do. But right now the plan is for the Mets to be in St. Louis the first week of May.
Let's hope that happens. You give me a nice off day on the 6th with an afternoon game. Howie, thanks for coming on here this afternoon. We are ready for baseball, and if there's a delay, I don't think Cardinal Nation is going to react very well, so we're going to hope for the best. I think baseball having the success that they did in 2020 is one of the great stories of the pandemic because we needed it. We needed it badly.
It wasn't a linear path from opening day to the end of the World Series, to be sure, but it was great to have it back, and hopefully we'll have it again this year in much more, you know, a much wider scope than what we did last.
Howie Rose with the New York Mets. Thanks so much, Howie. I really appreciate you coming on here this afternoon.
My pleasure. Stay well.
3:47, we have an audio cut of the day. It looks like the president has released this video. We'll have a little sample of that for audio cut of the day coming up in traffic with Roger is next on KMO.
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
And cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. The president has just released, I think it's about a 20-minute video. It's a farewell address. It's on the White House website right now. And here, what I believe is the final 2 minutes. We can't play the whole 20 minutes, but this will be your audio cut of the day this afternoon on KMOX.
This is a republic of proud citizens who are united by our common conviction that America is the greatest nation in all of history. We are and must always be a land of hope, of light, and of glory to all the world. This is the precious inheritance that we must safeguard at every single turn. For the past 4 years, I have worked to do just that. From a great hall of Muslim leaders in Riyadh to a great square of Polish people in Warsaw, from the floor of the Korean Assembly to the podium at the United Nations General Assembly, and from the Forbidden City in Beijing to the shadow of Mount Rushmore, I fought for you, I fought for your family, I fought for our country. Above all, I fought for America and all it stands for, and that is safe, strong, proud, and free. Now, as I prepare to hand power over to a new administration at noon on Wednesday, I want you to know that the movement we started is only just beginning. There's never been anything like it. The belief that a nation must serve its citizens will not dwindle, but instead only grow stronger by the day. As long as the American people hold in their hearts deep and devoted love of country, then there is nothing that this nation cannot achieve. Our communities will flourish. Our people will be prosperous. Our traditions will be cherished. Our faith will be strong. And our future will be brighter than ever before. I go from this majestic place with a loyal and joyful heart, an optimistic spirit, and a supreme confidence that for our country and for our children, the best is yet to come. Thank you and farewell. God bless you. God bless the United States of America.
That is the president's farewell address. It's your audio cut of the day. Traffic coming up, then total information PM on KMOX.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.